How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
She not only accepted corporate money, she also took corporate PAC money into her super PAC.
I've never been afraid to show up, stand up, or speak up.
He told us on day one he was going to lower inflation, and he has only made things worse.
The 42-year-old Ecuadorian-born Alder is seeking a spot on the fall ballot for the 4th Congressional District.
This is about building the movement that will transform a baseline standard of dignity for the people in our community.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Friday, so it's time to look back and break down the big stories of the week in our weekly news recap. A 20-year sentence for the white former sheriff's deputy who murdered an unarmed black woman, Sonia Massey, in her own home. Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth got into a tense exchange with Secretary of State Marco Rubio over aggressive immigration enforcement. Plus, the three leading Democratic candidates in the heated primary race to replace U.S. Senator Dick Durbin faced off in two debates.
Chicagoans are asking us to do more in this moment.
They are absolutely accessing private information to intimidate us at home.
They're now going to spend a whole bunch of money building up what can only be described as a secret police force.
Alex Preddy, the man who was shot and killed by federal agents in Minneapolis.
Greg Bovino had the title commander at large. Tonight, he's been kicked to commander at the curb.
We're going to start today's episode with the latest on Greg Bovino, the controversial Border Patrol official. And WBEZ investigative reporter Dan Mihalopoulos, who's one of our panelists this week, joins me in studio now. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Sasha.
Good to see you. Now, I mean, you've looked very closely at Greg Bovino, who's been heading up this aggressive immigration enforcement across the country, really. And your latest story has to do with a racist email. Tell me more.
Yeah, it's wild. At one time before he came to Chicago and became the scourge of what he calls illegals, in this and other cities, Greg Bovino was a Border Patrol muckety-muck in New Orleans, and a friend of his sent him an email that was a picture of a slave-owning Confederate general, and above it, he wrote, Chief Bovino. And Bovino wrote back, delete that. And he later testified in an employment discrimination case, and you'll be shocked to know that he was at the center of employment discrimination cases brought by four of his colleagues there in New Orleans.
I'm so shocked.
All of which were settled. But Bovino said he didn't think that he didn't see that email as racist. Don't know why he wanted to delete it then, and said that, he promoted the guy that sent him that email a short time later.
I mean, he's done so many more things since then, and none of it seems to be working out too well for him now because Bovino seems to have been pushed aside by the White House these days. Do we know where he is right now, Dan?
Well, he was last seen posting a video in front of Mount Rushmore defiantly saying that he's got the backs of his men. That, you know, I think his phrase for what he does is turn and burn, and he's the original turn and burner, these men who are carved into Mount Rushmore.
Oh, boy.
We have heard that he is being sent back to El Centro, California, which is far from the center of the action.
Yeah.
It's
he has to watch from the sidelines.
Pretty much he's going back to where he was before Trump took office, and they unleashed him on Chicago and other places far, far, far from any border.
Yeah, you cover a lot more about the controversial Border Patrol official in WBEZ's Becoming Bovino podcast. That's available wherever folks can get their pods, right, Dan?
Yeah, a lot of downloads, and there's a text version if you prefer. But if you want to go wherever you get your podcast, Becoming Bovino is about 30 minutes that will take you through his whole life from the Appalachian Mountains in North Carolina to the dusty border with Mexico and into Chicago and Minneapolis.
And we'll, of course, chat some more about Bovino's backstory later in this episode. So why don't we dive in? Thanks for stopping by, Dan.
All right.
Also at the table to help make sense of the week's news was Carrie Shepard, Chicago reporter with Axios, and Paris Schutz, political correspondent for Fox 32. Now, we found out just how much calling out the National Guard to Chicago last year actually cost the taxpayers. So Carrie crunched the numbers and filled us in.
$21 million. And the good news is it costs our city was the least expensive out of the nearly $500 million it cost to send to six cities. Portland, L.A., D.C. was the most, obviously, because the guard members were there the longest. Ours was, you know, yeah. I don't want to say cheap. That's a weird way to say $21 million.
Well, $223 million in D.C.
Right.
And $193 million in L.A. So, yeah, right. I hear where you're going with
we
this.
In Chicago, we had the fewest members deployed here and, you know, deployed in air quotes, because if you recall, both here and in Portland, the National Guard members never actually
they did nothing.
Were right. activated. They were sent here and kind of hung around. There was pictures of them. They were in, you know, suburban Elwood, you know, getting off the trucks and then kind of just lingering about, because they couldn't be because of a judge's order. April Perry issued an injunction that they could not be, you know, militarized on the streets.
Right. And that still cost us $21 million.
Still cost us $21 million, correct.
Interesting. Chicago Alders are responding to the recent Minneapolis tragedies, Paris. I mean, they advanced this plan that would give new enforcement powers related to the Sanctuary City Ordinance.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's responding to a lot of agitation and maybe some feelings of helplessness given what happened in Minneapolis. And there are some residents that want local officials to take more action. And so what these alders are proposing is to have COPA, the Civilian Office Police Accountability, the ability to investigate whether police are violating the Sanctuary City Ordinance. So COPA, as you know, investigates police-involved shootings to make a determination on justification. So City Council wants to empower them to do this. Now, the Sanctuary Ordinance basically says that local police cannot cooperate with federal immigration officials on enforcement of federal immigration law. And indeed, federal law and the Supreme Court has upheld the fact that the federal government cannot compel local authorities to enforce
right.
immigration law. So this is just a way to say, like, citizens want to be sure that police are following that sanctuary law. Now, what happens if COPA finds that a police officer assisted a federal agent when they shouldn't have? I don't know. I don't know if there's any kind of teeth or recourse, but it's just a way to kind of like address, I think, the fear people feel after what happened in Minneapolis.
Yeah, well, our mayor supports the ordinance. Let's hear what Johnson had to say.
It is not enough to be a welcoming city on paper. We must enforce our local law so that we can maintain the trust that we have built between law enforcement and immigrant communities throughout Chicago. Any violation or even the allegation of a violation can undermine that trust. So that is why it's important that there is an independent investigation when concerns are raised. This amendment would allow COPA to do just that.
Where does Police Superintendent Larry Snelling stand when it comes to this ordinance?
Well, the police superintendent and COPA always have kind of a tense relationship. Even we're going to get into the new administrator of COPA, and right. he says, like, we're not always going to agree, and that's good. That's healthy. You know, that's what policing does involve different sort of oversight bodies and a clash of ideas here. But I haven't heard Snelling really weigh in on this, given COPA this ability. Although what Snelling has said about this is, they do follow the sanctuary laws and ordinances, but also he has said in the past, like this summer, if you think that I should come and arrest federal agents for breaking the law, I can't do that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to arrest other law enforcement agents. And in fact, we are going to come to the aid if they, you know, there was a thing in Brighton Park where they had allegedly called for backup and allegedly a top police commander had refused. So there's disagreement here. All I know is that Snelling does not believe in using Chicago police to go and arrest federal agents.
In his quest to hold federal immigration agents accountable for their actions, Mayor Johnson said he's contemplating, quote, measures we hadn't previously considered.
And I tried to kind of drill him down on that.
Yeah,
and
like,
I don't
what
know
might what, that be?
I think what he's alluding to is some kind of prosecution, some kind of what would the city really legally be able to do?
Right.
Does he want the police department to be more aggressive? Has he had conversations with CPD over that? I mean, there's also the state's attorney, the Cook County state's attorney, who has not weighed in on this at all. And you have the shooting of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez in Franklin Park, the death at the hands of ICE officers, which former Mayor Lori Lightfoot called that a murder, basically. And she has taken the Cook County state's attorney to task for not investigating that. So it would seem like that is the office that has the purview to really investigate this thing. And she has decided not to weigh in on any of this.
Well, Dan, someone that we have been hearing a lot about in the past few months, the Border Patrol's Greg Bovino, he seems to have been pushed aside. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, we all remember Greg Bovino. He was strutting and preening around Chicago and the suburbs. And
Posing on the river.
Front of the bean.
Right, the naval invasion of Chicago right by the Trump Tower on the river, walking up and down the Magnificent Mile, telling our colleague Chip Mitchell that, when he asked them what kind of people you're looking to apprehend, he said, well, not people like you, Chip Mitchell. And, we're radio, but Chip Mitchell is a white guy like me. So, all due respect. So Greg Bovino made quite an impression here. He went on to Charlotte, New Orleans, Memphis, I think, at one point, possibly, and then Minneapolis. And the Bovino show, he was out of central casting, right? But now, he called himself commander at large.
Yes.
But he apparently was sidelined. He apparently went too far in Minneapolis, and now they've sent Tom Homan to lead the federal effort in Minneapolis, and Bovino is not there. He was last seen. They've immobilized his, his accounts have gone silent, let's just say. He was just as brash on social media as he was in person on the streets of our
cities. And he always
had
a camera crew with him.
Yes.
Well, and he had a camera crew with him apparently at Mount Rushmore, where he reappeared in front of, the monument of Mount Rushmore in full uniform. I don't think he's been fired. From what I've read, he's been sent back to El Centro, California, where he was the chief of a dusty stretch of the border in Southern California.
So just kind of
Mexico.
Reassigned, it seems.
Or sent back to where he was before his commander at large missions.
And I'm thinking of the deep dive that you also just did on Bovino's background, Dan. And folks can listen to the Becoming Bovino podcast wherever they get their pods. But tell us a bit more. What did you find out?
Yeah, we wanted to find out who is Greg Bovino, since he came in here and said that, told his troops that they're going to take back our city. Well, it's not his city. he's actually originally from North Carolina. My colleague Lauren Fitzpatrick and other colleagues went out there to interview people who knew him back when he was an even smaller Bovino. And now I went to California, where he was assigned for the last 5 years as the chief, to see what kind of stuff he was doing out there by the border. And then, we found out that a lot of the things that we saw in Chicago, people being accused of attacking, falsely accused, as it would turn out, of attacking agents, people saying that they were themselves attacked by agents, and all these sorts of things we saw in Chicago had really been going on along the border for a long time, way out there, where we weren't paying attention until he came here.
Mm. But can I just, this underscores the distinction here and this tension. There's ICE and there's Customs and Border Patrol, which was what Bovino led. And ICE is controversial in and of itself, but it does things a certain way. They're the ones that have done things more targeted. What Bovino and CBP were willing to do was what Stephen Miller had asked for. Go to the Home Depot and profile people, okay? ICE does things targeted. Bovino led convoys of people down residential streets, okay, in camo. It was like an occupation. It was all about the imagery, the content creation.
It was nothing I'd ever seen.
Throwing out these hype videos. And this is what people like Stephen Miller and the Trump administration, they want that content, the hype videos coming out. And that roiled Chicago. It roiled Minnesota. And frankly, the Trump administration realized they stepped in it because it went too far. Someone died.
Well, the other distinction there
two
is...
Two people died.
Two right. people died. Well, multiple two, people have died.
Many, many people have died.
Four, at least.
Right, absolutely.
Let's also remember Keith Porter in
L.A. LA. Exactly.
No one seems to be talking about it.
If you talk to... I guarantee you there are people in ICE saying, hey, you guys are giving us a bad name. And the threats that we're receiving, part of it is your fault because you're out there saying, look at me, as Dan said, he was preening, he was a peacock, he's on the river doing photo shoots with guns and camo. It's all about, look at me, we're here, we're occupied.
When pride cometh before the fall, but let's not focus on the individual. Like you said, the distinction, excuse me, really between ICE and Border Patrol also is, right, are you doing targeted enforcement against specific individuals who you know to have committed crimes since they came to the United States without permission? Or are you just going on the streets? Like the last time I saw Bovino, his people went up to somebody in the parking lot of a Costco at the Randhurst Mall in Mount Prospect and asked them, because they were Asian, if they were born in the United States, if they were U.S. citizens. One woman was shocked because she was clearly born here, spoke English the same way we're speaking it here with no accent. And she's like, I can't believe what just happened. Another man who didn't speak English at all, from what he told me, took out his green card and they ran it and they checked it and they let him keep going as he's, I mean, these are just incredible scenes we never expected in the U.S.
Well,
I saw him in the rideshare lot at O'Hare too, and he sets up a block for people to not be able to come out and turns to the, I asked him flat out, I said, do you know if any of these people have committed a crime? He says, well, we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. So we're now hearing that ICE agents in Minneapolis are under new orders to ease tactics. What exactly is changing, Dan?
Well, that's the issue that we're discussing here is, are they going to go after just people who have committed crimes, or are they going to just put a dragnet, you know, and toss, see who gets tangled up in it? The other distinction is, from what I've seen in the reporting, is they're being told not to engage with protesters. That we're never going to agree. They're not going to see it your way. We're not going to see it their way. And so, like, that's very different, obviously, than what Bovino. It was Bovino's Border Patrol guys, not ICE, who killed Alex Preti. And it was Bovino who, not only was that probably the last straw, but also went out there together with Kristi Noem and others, Stephen Miller, called Alex Preti a domestic terrorist. And
wanted to do massive harm, massacre people. Yeah.
And they walked that back.
There was no proof of it.
But then, look, did you see President Trump at 1:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time went back and called him an insurrectionist, Alex Preti?
Yeah.
Like early this morning. So based on that latest video that came out from a previous incident where he had allegedly kicked a taillight, and the family of Preti had begged, you know, please stop spreading misinformation about our son. But President Trump, it seemed like he was revising his plans. But then last night, no, we're going to go full throttle.
Full throttle. Hey, if you just got here, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You are listening to our weekly news recap where we dig into the week's top local stories. My guests today are Fox 32's Paris Schutz, Carrie Shepherd of Axios, and WBEZ's Dan Mihalopoulos. So, Paris, Senate Democrats in the White House, they've reached an agreement. This is to prevent a partial government shutdown, and they've temporarily funded the Department of Homeland Security. Well, get us up to speed here on the vote that's expected today.
And I think this is changing by the minute,
the
hour.
We know that in the next hour, there's a vote expected.
There's a vote expected, but you know, until they take that vote, I don't know that they have a firm deal, but Democrats have said they have a deal with the White House. So this would be a partial government shutdown. There's six agencies
that would
be funded.
And this could still very much happen.
It could happen, sure. So six agencies, of which Department of Homeland Security is one of them, facing funding right now. And obviously after what happened in Minneapolis, Democrats have said, well, we need to really drastically reform DHS, reform ICE, and really take away a lot of funding. Remember, President Trump and Republicans have boosted funding for ICE by an order of magnitude times 5 or 10. I mean, tons more money. So the deal now is that they will fund five of the six agencies. They will fund DHS temporarily for a couple of weeks as the two sides negotiate on how to reform. Now, I don't know that they're ever going to come to an agreement on what to do with DHS because Democrats want a real reduction in as Dan Mihalov. They don't want a dragnet anymore. What they want is very targeted enforcement. They want warrants. They want ICE to have to present warrants, which would really minimize the numbers.
Which is what they're supposed to do anyway, to be clear.
Well, and that's a great point, Carrie. I mean, and this is the thing, even in sanctuary cities like Chicago, if they present a judicial warrant, then a jail will honor an ICE detainer, and police will cooperate on catching a criminal.
Which Snelling has made very clear.
And every agency does do warrants. I mean, it happens all day, every day. These agencies under DHS have said, no, we shouldn't have to do that because we have a lot of numbers of people that we need to get, and that would just be too cumbersome. So Democrats are trying to put that into law, say, no, you have to have some more order to what you're doing here.
And ICE would still be funded, to be clear. It's already been fully funded because of last year's big, massive spending bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to take a closer look at one of those senators. Illinois' Tammy Duckworth got into a tense exchange with Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Let's listen.
The Trump administration has acknowledged that the vast majority of the men it rounded up and deported to torture under this law had no criminal records whatsoever.
We didn't torture
independent
anybody.
Over 75%.
Who did we torture? We haven't tortured anybody. We've arrested people that are members of gangs and we've deported
them.
We don't want gang members in our country.
Investigations have found that many of the men were here legally. If the administration is willing to lie about who it's targeting under this law, what protections do totally innocent people have against abuse?
So the drama continued afterwards when Vice President J.D. Vance took to social media and posted, quote, "Watching Tammy Duckworth obsessively interrupt Marco Rubio during this hearing is like watching Forrest Gump argue with Isaac Newton," end quote. And that wasn't the end of the social media battle. Senator Duckworth then responded on X, and she wrote, quote, "Forrest Gump ran toward danger in Vietnam. Your boss ran to his podiatrist crying bone spurs." Duckworth condemned what she called, you know, petty insults at the expense of people with disabilities. Others, including the Democratic Party of Illinois, called the comment ableist. I want to hear from you guys here. I mean, ableist, just a plain old insult. Does it matter? And I want to also mention that J.D. Vance doesn't know how to spell because he
misspelled
Forrest.
It's not spelled like Forrest
of
Trees.
Don't be an ableist on his spelling.
That's true.
I'm sorry. I'm just a grammar geek, a.k.a. a journalist. Well, Forrest has two R's.
You know, Sashan, the vice president's job is different in every administration. It's not a very defined job. Dick Cheney had a lot of power. Joe Biden, you know, had his portfolio. It seems like the main job of Vice President J.D. Vance is to be the Twitter troll in chief and troll, act like a social media troll and put out things that are attempts at humor. You know, this was kind of like Borscht Belt shtick he was trying out, and you know, maybe the base responds. It didn't seem to really land, and then people got upset about it. But you know, you wonder why he's picking on Senator Duckworth, who we all know had her legs blown off, in service in Iraq. But that exchange, you know, this is getting to the heart. This is the Secretary of State, which shouldn't really deal with immigration, but she's talking about immigration with him because there have been these deals with other countries to send people that they detain, like El Salvador, which she brought up torture. And there has been reports and eyewitnesses of some kind of torture like behavior in that jail in El Salvador. So I think that's what that exchange was trying to get to.
Yeah, and just the comments on X were just in poor taste. Judge in downstate Illinois has sentenced a former Sangamon County sheriff to 20 years in prison for the murder of Sonia Massey. Now, this was a case of a white police officer shooting an unarmed black woman to death inside of her own home. Dan, what are your thoughts on how this turned out, you know, with Sean Grayson getting the maximum sentence for second-degree murder?
Yeah, our family was pleased with that decision based on the reports of the reporter Mawa Iqbal, who was our Springfield correspondent that was in the courtroom when this happened. I always feel that things that happen in Springfield outside of politics somehow are not covered as thoroughly, but this did gain national attention. There was a chilling video. Mm-hmm. She's in her kitchen. She called for help.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he comes in there and he apologized for the way that he treated her. But he ended up, you know, doubting her version, telling her to put down some water that was boiling on her stovetop, I guess, and ended up shooting her. And we saw it all. And this was an officer.
It flips in a matter of seconds. Yes. Like seconds, he flips. Yeah, it's very, very quick.
Completely flips.
But it wasn't
her.
Completely surprising when you consider that he had, at a very young age, I think he's 31 now, and he's going to be going away for what, like 20 years, possibly. But this was a couple years ago, so he's in his 20s, and he'd already been through 6 different departments in Central Illinois.
He had quite the track record.
With different problems, driving at extremely high rate of speed in one case. And, yeah, I mean, it really speaks to how you talk about priests who committed sexual abuse being moved around. But it's not exactly the same thing, but he's going from one department to the other. And didn't these folks know not to hire him, that maybe he should not have been a cop by that point.
Yeah, and since Massey's death, her family's reached a $10 million wrongful death settlement with Sangamon County. They pushed hard for reforms, including requiring stricter background checks in law enforcement hiring. The new law went into effect on January 1st, Carrie. I wonder if you think it's going to lead to any significant change.
Well, yeah, to your point and to Dan's point, I mean, that was a big, well, you know, the family really and the Sangamon County State's Attorney wanted a first-degree murder charge, actually, but he was convicted on second degree. But, you know, the Sonia Massey law is supposed to be these more thorough background checks. There's also parts of it that don't get talked about as much, which is, you know, sending out behavioral health specialists. That was another thing with Sonia Massey. She seemed to be in some sort of mental health crisis, and neither, you know, Grayson or his partner handled that very well, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, like Dan said, you would think that these thorough background checks already happen, but, you know, people get moved around. They jump from this place to this place. Lots of people in very important positions with vulnerable people, teachers, priests, cops, you know, they don't get as thorough background checks maybe as they should.
Yeah, and though, you know, this was the lesser of the charges, second-degree murder, the family still seems to be pleased with the outcome.
Yeah,
you know,
they chanted,
we did it.
Yeah,
right?
And I saw that he has cancer. He has pretty aggressive cancer.
He has aggressive cancer in like four parts of his body. Yeah. And so they, you know, they were trying to get 6 years.
Some leniency there.
You're right, yeah. Let's stick here with law enforcement and sort of pivot back to COPPA. We talked about the Civilian Office of Police Accountability earlier. That's Chicago's police oversight agency. Now, as we teased, they announced they've got a new chief. That's LaKenya White. And she's actually been serving as the interim head of the agency, Dan. So not so new, but what do we know about her?
Yeah, we know a bit about her because, you know, this is an agency where her predecessor, Andrea Kirsten, you know, was criticized for being too tough on cops. So this is always the thing with accountability, right, and transparency in the police department. You know, what are the rights of the cops, you know, who have all sorts of appeals and drag these things out for years, versus the ability to punish them when they have done something wrong. But they definitely created this feeling and that Andrea Kirsten was too tough on them. And now will LaKenya White, who's been the interim and gotten the job now permanently, will she be soft on cops who are accused? Will she help whitewash some of the charges against them that come from the public or from other members of the department? Because sometimes they beef on each other, as they say. But in this case, I guess, you know, time will tell when we see some specific cases, how she's going to really treat these situations and if that's any different. Because I think the cops already obviously have Superintendent Snelling in their corner pretty clearly.
Right.
He's a cop's cop in my experience. Will COPPA really represent the civilians, as the name implies, who have to come into contact with those whom they serve, who are supposed to be serving and protecting.
Yeah, I mean, Paris said this earlier that, you know, Snelling says we disagree with COPPA, that's healthy. Yes, it's a delicate relationship because what COPPA recommends, Snelling can, of course, disagree with and say, no, we don't want that. And then they have to come to some sort of agreement to which COPPA has the final word, supposedly. So, you know, it is an important relationship. He does need to disagree, but she also has to. It's a bit of a political dance, too.
Well, then it goes to the police board.
Right.
And then the police board has to adjudicate it, basically. I mean, the process of finding wrongdoing against a police officer and then firing a cop is very, very complicated, as you shouldn't just be able to willy-nilly fire someone, but there should be some measure of justice.
Right.
And this whole oversight system has been, it got put into place after Laquan McDonald COPA, which was called IPRA, never ever found wrongdoing, which, by the way, Lori Lightfoot used to lead IPRA for a time being years and years and years ago. And so, it was almost a joke when something went to IPRA. Hey, there was this police-involved shooting. Why don't you investigate it? Oh, sure, yeah, we'll investigate. We'll do a thorough.
Right.
They never did,
Yeah, let's pivot now to the upcoming primary election. Mail-in ballots and early voting in some suburbs. It starts next week. ABC 7 hosted a Senate debate last night with the top three candidates in the race to replace Dick Durbin. I'm talking about Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, who represents Illinois' 8th District, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who represents the 2nd District, and Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. And Monday night, I had the honor of hosting their first debate. I'm going to play some of the highlights from Monday.
We need to dismantle ICE. We need to impeach Kristi Noem, and we need to build an agency that people can trust.
My opponents have taken millions of dollars in corporate PAC money.
I should have brought some body armor here.
They pulled out undocumented and Americans, Black Americans, out of the building. They kicked in doors.
We have to give property tax relief, especially to places like Illinois where we see property taxes going through the roof.
By giving a tax break to middle-class families and paying for it with the tax increase on those making $1 million or more.
Trump did say when he got elected that he would go after the worst of the worst, and said he'd go after families.
Paris, your thoughts on where this race stands with 6.5 weeks until primary day and less than a week from when folks in our area can actually vote early.
It's amazing that the election is already upon us. These three I don't think there's a huge distance in terms of what their platforms are and what they believe. I think they're all obviously not in favor of keeping ICE the way it is, whether abolishing it or completely reforming it. The fault lines seem to be on, where these candidates are getting their money. So you have Juliana Stratton, who is J.B. Pritzker's lieutenant governor. It's his candidate. That's the one he is pushing out there, complaining that Krishnamoorthy, who is a very prolific fundraiser. I mean, he has lapped the field in fundraising and then getting on the air. I mean, he's way ahead in the polling right now because you always see him on the air. So he's done a really good job getting on the air early. Stratton's saying, picking on where he's gotten his funding, a top executive over the years of Palantir, which is a contractor with the Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
Palantir, this very controversial company that does surveillance and founded by Peter Thiel and, who knows
what J.D. Vance's mentor.
J.D. Vance's mentor. Who knows what really this company is involved with. But over the years, Krishnamoorthy has gotten some donations from a top executive of Palantir. Stratton has called that out. Krishnamoorthy is saying, you've gotten corporate money.
Yeah.
So, they're not really going to disagree much on policy. So they're attacking each other on where they're getting their money.
Right. And it was a little bit of a tone change, though, in that second debate versus the first one. Fewer jabs, more of a focus on trying to set themselves apart. One thing that did come out is where they stand on minimum wage, for instance. Right. Stratton's proposing a $25 an hour plan. The others agree $17 an hour is probably more in touch with reality. Krishnamoorthy is supporting a retirement age for members of Congress, while the other two are saying, nah. Carrie, your thoughts after sort of watching these two?
I think really savvy voters and those who are paying very close attention are actually going to, Paris mentioned the abolish ICE, and then you hear Pritzker say abolish Trump's ICE. This does become a matter of semantics and what do you really mean here? We know that when you put abolish in front of a law enforcement agency, it doesn't work quite as well with the candidates. They usually back off of that. But what does abolish that really mean? And then also Raja Krishnamoorthy is also doing what Pritzker does about, Trump's. As you noted, last night was a lot more milder. Your guys' was pretty spicy on Monday. It was.
I mean, that's what we. That's what we aim to do. We bring the spice.
Yeah. And they all, you know, sort of, they all kind of collaborate.
I had nothing to do with the spice.
No, I mean, they were, you know, you guys covered a lot in that. And,
we did,
you know,
yeah.
Last night they were all pretty much on the same page of attacking Trump.
Yeah. Jennifer Steinhauer and Tina Svandelis at the Sun-Times mm-hmm. did a wonderful
great
job.
Great job, all of you.
Yeah, all of you.
One race not getting as much attention. The governor's race. Kerry said a moment ago, there's a governor's race? Yeah, J.B. Pritzker's running uncontested on the Democratic side, but several candidates are vying for the Republican nomination. I want to give you just a quick moment here, Paris, to tell us about the interview you had with Ted Dabrowski.
Dabrowski, yeah, I've been trying to profile the candidates in the GOP side. There's Dabrowski, there's Darren Bailey, there's a little-known longtime city lobbyist named Rich Heidner,
yeah,
who had given money to Brandon Johnson.
A few Republicans against Pritzker.
So Dabrowski's an interesting guy because he had been at Illinois Policy Institute, which is a libertarian think tank. He's a policy guy. He's come up with, some libertarian policy proposals. I mean, in Illinois, that means, significantly reducing the size of government. But really, they're after going after public employee unions and the political power that those unions have. So that's kind of where Dabrowski's coming from. Lives in the North Shore, the son of immigrants. He seems to have taken more of a Trumpy tack recently in this race. But as I've known him over the years, it was really about libertarian financial issues,
mm-hmm.
pensions, cutting spending, cutting government. So really hoping that maybe, this is going to be an uphill battle for any Republican.
Yeah.
It's a midterm where Democrats are going to have a huge advantage anyway. J.B. Pritzker obviously has a huge financial advantage. And he's banking on, maybe people are fed up with taxes and the outflow of people leaving the state. Still a huge uphill battle. And Darren Bailey does seem to be leading in the polls.
That'll be interesting to watch.
He ran before and he lost last time to J.B. Pritzker.
Let's see if he'll have a different outcome this time. A new candidate entered the race this week to replace Congressman Chuy Garcia, who revealed last year that he wouldn't be running for another term. So, Dan, just quickly tell us the latest here and remind us, what was that drama around how Garcia dropped out of the race to begin with?
Yeah, Chuy Garcia sort of built this brand as being anti-machine guy, further to the left, and ran for mayor and lost, but forced a runoff against Rahm Emanuel, who had far more money some years ago. Does something very off-brand, and indicates to everyone in the world that he's going to run again. And, incumbency is so powerful, particularly in Congress and in a district that's that blue, that, it discouraged anyone else who might have wanted to run from getting organized. And so he then at the last minute pulls out. So he's trying to set it up for one of his allies, right? And now there's some people that are saying, look, we're not going to sit down and take that. There's Alderman Byron Sigcho-Lopez, who is very far to the left, at least in his messaging and his activity on the city council, representing Pilsen and some of the areas around there, who is going to run as an independent and try to, obviously he's a Democrat, but wasn't able to get together the signatures and all the other things to get on the ballot. Because Chuy Garcia set it up that way.
Kerry, the Trump administration has once again threatened to cut federal funding to Illinois. What is it about this time?
This is about abortion, about reproductive rights. Obviously, since Roe v. Wade was overturned, Illinois has come, is a state that is very, because of Governor Pritzker and many other lawmakers that support it, they are protective of reproductive rights, unlike many of our Midwestern neighbors. So often, people come here for care.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from the HHS, the Health and Human Services, sent a letter to Illinois. They have until, I think, February something to respond because they say that a law there's a law that requires providers who do not want to perform abortions that they must provide the patient with information about abortion, but also referrals.
Yes.
So they say that this goes against conscience laws, that they should not have to do this. This is from the Thomas More Society. We probably know this is a very Catholic organization run now by Peter Breen, who was actually in the state legislature when this amendment to the law passed here. And they have a separate lawsuit to the Thomas More Society that mm-hmm. Lower court ruled that it does not it does not violate conscience laws to refer someone, but it does to have to provide information. This is this group, Hope for Life. It's down in, I think it's in Southern Illinois, Central Illinois, that has brought this forward. Thomas More has brought it on their behalf, that the doctors there feel like this goes against, you know, their conscience.
Mm-hmm. Dan, a Cook County judge has been removed from the bench. This is for some controversial comments. What happened? What did he say?
Judge James R. Brown decided he's going to write a guest column for a website called John Cass News, which is not really news. It's some opinions. He voiced the opinion that the 2020 election was stolen. Of course, there's no proof of that.
Haven't heard that before.
Denounced murders of U.S. citizens by illegal aliens, as he put it, and criticized, quote, Soros-funded progressive prosecutors, some red meat issues for the right. And two lawyers groups urged his removal over that blog post. Of course, the right will say that he's being canceled. But you're a judge.
Right.
Carrie, something new is coming to the United Center. Fill us in.
Something new is already at the United Center, actually. These are THC drinks.
Okay.
They are offering, just to be clear, just at events, not at Bulls and Blackhawks games, because the NHL and NBA have rules that you cannot promote cannabis and THC. This comes at an interesting time. As we know, the city council is, you know, going back and forth on hemp, hemp-derived, you know, THC, and, you know, legalizing it. And there's many alders who are against that, but they've carved out for THC drinks, which is good for a lot of, for example, beer breweries, you know, bars have started to serve these because fewer people are drinking alcohol. And
so this is an option for them. So the THC drinks are an exception.
These are an exception.
To the city ordinance.
But we should clarify. So this is THC derived from hemp.
Yes.
As opposed to cannabis, where we have legal cannabis in Illinois. You have to go pay millions of dollars, get the license.
And dispensary, yeah.
At a dispensary. And so this, so city council passed a hemp-derived THC ban. So this Delta 8, Delta 9 stuff you see at head shops and gas stations, that's going to be banned. Now, with the drinks, what's confusing to me is the federal government, Congress, passed a ban on hemp-derived THC that goes into effect in a little under a year. So everyone has a year to get ready for that. Will there be a federal carve-out for these drinks? I don't I don't know that they're going to be federally legal come a year now that they're selling them at the United Center. So there's the hemp-derived cannabis, and then there's hemp-derived THC, and then there's the cannabis-derived THC, which is the legal stuff, which is the licensed stuff. But, you know, there are businesses, like you said, bars and breweries that are selling these drinks. There's a pet shop that's called me in Roscoe Village saying, we sell these CBD products for dogs that are really popular.
And they're worried about ordinance,
course,
right? They think that it might lead to them closing,
Of course. Yeah, it threatens their business.
Carrie, sticking with you, I want to turn to something different because a lot of businesses, speaking of businesses, they're participating in a nationwide strike today. This is targeting ICE.
Yeah, this is in solidarity with Minneapolis. Obviously, we saw last Friday in Minneapolis, thousands and thousands took to the streets and businesses in solidarity closed. This is the concept that we know of, you know, vote with your wallet, don't give these corporations your money. You know, there's always kind of the caveat, don't ignore small businesses.
Yeah.
You still need your business. There isn't the widespread closure of businesses here like there has been in Minneapolis. A few have popped up here and there. I saw like Vodka Creamery, it's a vegan ice cream shop, Comico Bar and West Loop. Other places are saying, look, we're going to stay open, but we're going to donate our proceeds to, you know, Minneapolis mutual aids, you know, groups. And others are just saying, you know, we're too small. We can't close. We have to honor reservations.
Right. Yeah. Some businesses participating. Brewed Coffee Shop in Chicago's Avondale neighborhood.
Nice.
Catherine Ann Confections in Irving Park. Some businesses that are taking a different tactic, like the fish guy in Albany Park.
I think he's giving 100% of his.
Yeah, donating 100% of their profits to the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. We all know Chicago has some of the best neon signs and marquees of any big city in America. Carrie, back to you. Axios readers are talking about this too. They're voting on their favorites.
Their favorite marquees.
And I need to know your favorites too, Dan and Paris.
I have a favorite. I don't know if it's in your choices or if I can write it in. I am an Axios newsletter subscriber.
Okay.
But I didn't check that one out yet. I will exercise my right to vote for the Sugar Bowl, a diner across from the metro station in Des Plaines.
Oh, that's a good, the suburbs didn't get as much love as they should. I'm sorry, Dan. The three of us do not live in the suburbs. I apologize. We try to be open-minded about the suburbs. If you haven't seen already, I mean, it's out, so I can say Chicago Theater won, which is probably not that much of a surprise.
Not a surprise.
The final two were Chicago Theater versus Wrigley Field.
Beautiful, iconic sign. Mm.
Mine got knocked out in the first round, which was Central Camera.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and another one, LaSalle Flowers, that also got knocked out in the first round.
How about the Green Mill?
Green Mill was in there also. It made it, I think, a few rounds, but it got knocked out.
It's iconic to me.
Yeah. It's iconic, yeah.
WBEZ's Lisa Lavez is giving a shout-out to the Heart of Chicago Hotel sign.
Oh, yes. Was on there. Was it on there? That got knocked out. Yeah, of course, at Ridge and Peterson there. That's an iconic one as well. That was in the first round, but that got knocked out.
We love our neon signs.
We do. I do wonder how much they're... electric bills are, because almost always there's bulbs out on one side.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Well, Move Over Lala and Summer Smash and all the many other festivals that this city has come to be known for. There's a new R&B and house music festival that just entered the chat. The Forever Mine Music Festival. It's going to kick off at Union Park on Memorial Day weekend. It's going to feature some of the biggest artists with hits from the 2000s.
I'm
just feeling all warm inside just talking about the 2000s. The lineup includes Keisha Cole, Kelly Rowland, Juvenile, DJ Lady D, Chicago's Terry Hunter, and so much more. I mean, anyone else
is this
excited
in Union Park,
for
you
this?
Said?
Union Park, yeah. Memorial Day weekend, May 23rd and 24th.
There's an opening, Pitchfork left Union Park a couple. That was usually around in July. And so there's definitely, it's nicer, there's a space for a new big festival to come.
And I mean, this type of music is just right up my alley.
That's awesome.
I mean, just take me back. Y2K, anyone else?
It was an innocent time.
It was.
A more innocent time.
Well, we did think the world was going to end.
Well, that's right. 2000. And then 2001 wasn't so innocent. But. Yeah,
it was an innocent time, he says.
It was an innocent time.
Well, no one's enjoying an outdoor music festival this weekend, though, because guess what, guys? There's more snow coming.
I know.
You can still go outdoors and enjoy a festival.
Paris is
stand
pro in the snow.
Paris is pro snow, we learned before the show.
You're going to stand in the middle of a winter weather advisory to go check out some
music? It's beautiful. No. This weekend, I'm very interested in the Chicago Puppet Festival.
Yeah.
Or is it the International Puppet?
International Puppet Festival. That goes on for a few weeks.
I think this weekend there's a show called The Sex Lives of Puppets. and if a title ever was intriguing, it's that one. I don't know what that entails, but but that's going on this weekend. It should be interesting. I think that's at the Biograph.
That is a big festival, honestly. It's international and it's very well known. Yeah, it's very cool.
What other plans do y'all have for this weekend?
Going north to Wisconsin with friends.
Wisconsin. Okay.
You're going even colder.
Yeah. What a decision to make.
More snow here, but I'm bringing the snowshoes.
I'm
so
also
judgy.
Going north to Rockford to see my family.
Yes, very nice. But family is everything, right?
Yeah.
Folks, if you're still looking for something to do and you actually do want to go out and brave at least some of the cold, you might want to consider seeing Drumline Live at the Auditorium Theater. It's on Sunday. It's the story.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's about the marching band tradition that we've come to know, of course, at HBCUs. Mm. I'm going to go.
Nice.
I'm going to check it out.
There's still tickets? Because it's only one day, right?
I think there are still tickets.
Nice.
And we will be talking to the creator of the show on Monday here on the show. Because Black History Month is kicking off too, which is kind of nice, right?
Absolutely.
Before we go, I mean, tell me, what's on your radar for next week?
I am covering the infiltration of Barnes & Noble. I don't mean that to be so pejorative. There's a lot more Barnes & Nobles popping up, and you guys have covered this well. At least one bookstore, Volumes Book Cafe in Wicker Park, says, their sales went down 20-30% since Barnes & Noble came in. Looking at some Hyde Park small bookstores, indie bookstores, who are saying, we don't want you here either. I'm also covering the 9th District race. Remember, there's like 4,000 people running, but that's Daniel Biss. And he's the mayor. He's kind of leading the polling there. So I'm
Daniel Biss.
Daniel Biss. But Laura Fine, Kat Abu-Ghazaleh. So I'm
You've got your hands full.
Yeah.
Paris, real quick.
I think next week, city council is going to take up the rat contraception ordinance proposed
Thanks,
by
we'll look out for that story.
Alderman Timmy Knudsen.
Is that like puppet contraception?
Right.
You know, puppet sex and rat contraception. These are the things going on right now in Chicago.
And Mihalopoulos.
I'm going to try to preserve the element of surprise as an investigative reporter.
Yes. I like that.
He's not going to give you a scoop.
He's not going to be a scoop.
Well, that's it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to WBEZ's Dan Mihalopoulos, Fox 32's Paris Schatz, and Carrie Shepherd of Axios.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.